It was first thing in the morning, the day of the cross. The sun had just begun to break and crest over the buildings and the homes and the businesses in the center of town. And standing atop the white marble steps that led up to his home stood Pontius Pilate. Now, Pontius isn't his first name. It was more of a job description. You see, it means fifth. He was the fifth person to have his job as the magistrate representing the Roman Empire in Jerusalem in recent history. He was attempting to be successful where the previous four had failed. He was attempting to keep the peace. As is the case when there's an outside country occupying another one, this town, this city, this country, it begins to bristle and buck and fight against the outsiders and the soldiers and the taxes and the rules and the regulations imposed upon them. And it was Pontius Pilate, it was Pilate's job to keep the peace. And so he stood atop those white marble steps leading up to his home in the center of town that day. And a scene that can best be described as unlikely, because he was flanked on either side by two men in some ways that were very, very similar, and in other ways they were very, very different. On one side stood Barabbas, who was known as a violent man, a notorious man, the leader of a revolt. And on the other side stood Jesus of Nazareth. He was known as a rabbi whose message of forgiveness and grace was unfamiliar to the hearers. It was very, very different than the current messages they were getting from the religious systems of their day. It was as welcomed as it was unfamiliar, though, to his followers. And what was so unlikely about this situation in this moment is that Pontius Pilate, in that moment, had to decide which of these two men was going to be set free and re-enter society innocent, and which of these two men was going to die a painful death later that day on the cross. What is Shakespearean in its unexpectedness is how similar these two men were. Actually, in some of the oldest manuscripts and scrolls of the Bible, Barabbas' first name is included. His first name was Jesus. Jesus bar Abbas. Bar meaning son of, Abbas meaning the father. And so you have Jesus, son of the father. Jesus of Nazareth was sometimes referred to as the Son of Man. In John 3, it says that Jesus was the only begotten Son of God the Father. So in some way, both of these men were defined by their fathers. Barabbas, in the book of Matthew, actually in chapter 27, it says this. It says, there was a notorious prisoner, a man named Barabbas. He was known as notorious. He was known as a violent man. But the books of Mark and the book of Luke, like in Luke 23, has a little more nuance for Barabbas. Luke 23 says this. It says Barabbas was a prisoner and taking part in an insurrection in Jerusalem against the government and for murder. You see, Barabbas, he was the leader of a revolt, a leader of an insurrection that was trying to overthrow the Roman occupation in Jerusalem. But you and I know that the winner of war gets to determine the legacy of those involved in it, right? Like, if you win the war, you are the good guy. The people you were fighting are inherently bad. And so Barabbas led a revolt, an insurrection that was failed. But had the insurrection not failed, he wouldn't be a notorious sinner or a murderer or someone who's known for violence. He'd be known as a patriot, a statesman, a freedom fighter, a hero. Because ultimately what Barabbas represented was he represented a man who was willing to die for the freedom of his followers, for the freedom of his people. Jesus also came for the freedom of his people, but his weapons weren't swords and spears. His weapons were grace and forgiveness. And he taught these through these like allegories and metaphors. He talked about kingdoms, not of this earth, and he taught about priceless treasures buried. He talked about pearls, and he talked about lost sons who returned to their father and their fathers running out to meet them. He taught an allegory. He taught about this God who loves and runs out to meet you. So his weapons weren't swords and spears. His weapons were grace and forgiveness, but he was willing to live and die for the freedom of his followers nonetheless. And so what you have is what's fascinating is you have two men, both of whom were living and were willing to die for the freedom of their followers. And in between them stood Pilate. And he had to decide which one was going to live and which one was going to die. Actually, Jesus' followers were expecting someone a little bit more like Barabbas. They expected Jesus to overthrow and to give political freedom. This is actually what Barabbas was trying to do. Now, I picture Barabbas earlier that day being told the news. See, Barabbas knew that the cross was invented for people like him. Like, if Pilate's job was to keep the peace, then Pilate was going to do whatever it took to have people like Barabbas not make Barabbas' choice again. Like, if Barabbas wanted to overthrow the Roman Empire and Pilate's job was to keep the peace for the Roman Empire, then these two were like diametrically opposite and opposing in their goals. And so Pilate would have wanted this guy to be a message and an example for anyone like him. But I imagine he, Barabbas, earlier that day, in his cell in some dungeon somewhere, probably hasn't seen the sunlight in days, if not weeks. He gets the news from his jailer. The jailer comes in and says, "Well, Barabbas, it's your lucky day. Pilate's going to set one person free today, as is the custom this time of year, and you are one of the two options." Now, Barabbas, somewhere in his dungeon, in some cell far away, had known all hope was lost. His heart was full of dread and terror. It's only a matter of time. It's when, not if, I am put to death for the insurrection, for the revolt that failed. And then he heard that news, and this little spark, this little ember of hope began to grow in his heart. He began to hope beyond hope and pray with the fervency that when he saw the person across the stage from him, that person was more infamous, more violent, more notorious than himself, so that he would be set free that day. And as Barabbas made his way out of his cell and, you know, up the stairs, and he hadn't seen the sun in days, and then he comes outside and his eyes are still adjusting to the sun, and his wrists, they're in shackles, and he makes his way up, and his eyes are adjusting to the sun, and he's trying to make out the form of the person across the stage from him. He's hoping beyond hope they're more violent, more guilty, so that he can be found less guilty and be set free. And finally, his eyes adjust to the sun, and he makes out the face, a face he recognizes, and he realizes that all hope is lost, because there is no way, there is no way someone who has a violent past like him is going to be set free for someone who is innocent, who there are no charges, Roman or Jewish law, that would possibly put him here. And then he realizes what Pilate has done. See, Pilate has made this situation so one-sided, so obvious, that of course the people are going to set Jesus free, and he's going to get what he wanted with Barabbas. You ever have this? I have kids. You ever have this where they're like, I know I'm supposed to be asleep 15 minutes ago, but I'm super hungry. Chocolate cake? And you're like, I understand that you're hungry. It's been 5 hours since dinner. I'll tell you what. Then what you do is you let them make a choice, but it's like two choices that you're both a fan of, and so they think they're in charge, but really, like, the options are so one-sided, you're really in charge. You're like, you can either go to bed hungry, or you can have some grapes. Which would you like? See, and they came down with chocolate cake on the mind, but then you gave them a choice, and so they think they're in charge. Like, grapes? And they're like, Dad is so great. He gave me some grapes, right? And you're the winner. But really, like, they came down with chocolate cake on the mind, but you gave them a choice. But the choice was so one-sided, hungry or grapes. And they're like, give me the grapes, right? This is what Pilate is doing. He's saying, do you want the guy who has been violent, who has killed, or do you want this guy who no charge whatsoever at all has ever come against him that would possibly put him here? This is what he has done. This very, very one-sided choice he has made. And so at this very moment, Pilate steps forward and he says, as you know, it is our custom this time of year to set one prisoner free. I will allow you to choose the prisoner who will re-enter your ranks, your society, and your community. Would you like Barabbas, the notorious sinner and murderer? Or would you like Jesus, the rabbi from Nazareth? Now, what Jesus had done all along, both of these two men had stood up against the establishment. He had stood up against the establishment of the Roman Empire, and Jesus had stood up against the establishment of the religious systems. The systems that said you have to follow all the rules or God is opposed to you. You have to be in, not out. You have to be a certain thing. You have to do all the right things. You have to not do all the wrong things. And if you do any of the wrong things, then if you don't do all the right things, then God is opposed to you. And this was the system that they had. And Jesus had spoken up against that. It wasn't about doing all the right things and checking all the right boxes, but it's about giving all of yourself over to God. It's about your heart. And this system was going to upset the apple cart of the religious system of that day. And so in this moment, when Pilate said, you can have either one, who do you want? There were a few influencers in the crowd who began to speak, who began to rally the people, to turn the crowd. And eventually, there was this rumble of people who were talking and they were debating and discussing who they would ask for. And this rumble turned into a roar and it got a little louder. And eventually, like, people started yelling out a name of who they wanted. But the roar was louder than the names being called. But then some of the people calling out for names, like, aligned, and they began calling out the same name in unison. And it wasn't quite louder than the roar yet, but you could almost make it out. And a few moments later, the name that was being spoken in unison was much louder and undeniable. You could only hear one name rising above the roar. And that was this name. The crowd began to call out, give us Barabbas. We want Barabbas. Pilate, shocked, couldn't believe what is happening. Well, I have to do the action, you got to say the action. If you guys want Barabbas, what do you want me to do with Jesus? And this time it didn't take a few moments. All the voices cried out at once, as if they'd been practicing for weeks. Crucify him! Crucify him. And they kept saying it. The Bible says they said it over and over. Crucify him. Crucify him. Long after they could have been done saying it, they were still saying it. The people in the crowd had gotten the whole horde, the mob, like, worked up, and they kept saying it over and over. Crucify him. Crucify him. At this moment, Barabbas, I picture him still in handcuffs. At this point, looking up at the crowd, shocked. What? Why? Having no idea the larger story, the larger narrative going on that he was caught in the middle of, but not really that involved in, even though his name is forever recorded in history. Wait, you want me set free? And then he musters the courage and he looks over at Jesus. Sure, he was going to see terror and dread and shock on his face. And here Jesus stood, calm, with a look on his face like he knew it was going to happen this way all along. And he looks at Barabbas, and he shakes his head. At this moment, Barabbas has the handcuffs, the shackles, the restraints removed from his wrists and his ankles, and he's let go, and he joins the crowd like anyone else. Those same Roman soldiers who let go of the shackles and the restraints dragged Jesus off. And if you're familiar with the story, you know that he's given a cross. He carries the cross for as long as he physically can across town. Eventually, someone steps in to help him. He was then nailed to that cross and died on that cross. And this story is unique. It's different because it's this cross. Everything that Jesus experiences from that moment forward was intended for Barabbas. But at no point did Jesus fight it. Isaiah 50 verse 6 says this about Jesus. I offered my back to those who beat me and my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mockery and spitting. Jesus was not a man who was fighting what was happening to him that day. That's why he was there. And you think about the story, it's, if you were Barabbas in that moment, how would you feel? How would you have felt if you were Barabbas in that moment? Shock, relief, maybe some sort of morbid gratitude, not knowing what's going on or why this whole thing played out the way it did. Nothing adds up. Here's the craziest thing about this story. I love this story. Because it's my story. Because I am Barabbas. I could not set myself free. Jesus did it for me. I could not take off my own restraints, the restraints of sort of sin and my own terrible destructive habits, and Jesus did it for me. That Jesus willingly gave up his life and his freedom so that I could have both. I stand before you as someone who the Barabbas story is my story. I had no power to do that on my own, but Jesus set me free. And this thing, this story of Jesus dying on the cross, it doesn't end on Friday. Because Jesus did for Barabbas on Friday what he wouldn't, because Jesus could do for Barabbas on Sunday what he couldn't. You see, if Barabbas couldn't manage an insurrection, there's no way Barabbas could handle a resurrection. You see, if Friday is marked by the cross, the death on the cross, then Sunday is marked by the triumph in the tomb. See, death couldn't hold Jesus down, and 3 days later, after Jesus died on the cross, he came back to life. And that's what we are here for today. Maybe you're here in Easter because you like, I don't know, dressing up one day a year. Or maybe your mom or your aunt or your uncle or your, I don't know, boyfriend, girlfriend, someone in your life drug you to church. You don't normally come. I don't know why. I mean, some of you are here because you come every week because this Jesus story, this is something you've committed your life to. I don't know why we're all here today. But this is all of our story. That if you're someone who's given yourself over to Jesus, the death on the cross is the invitation to become Barabbas, to have that cross that was intended for you, to have that sort of death, that no power to set yourself free, and to have that taken from you, and for Jesus, who willingly gave up his life and his freedom so that you could have both. That's what this is. Easter is an invitation to become Barabbas. Have you tried and tried and tried to shake yourself free? Have you said, no, this time I'm going to be different. I'm going to change my life. There's this stuff in my life that I'm ashamed of, that I wish I could change, but I can't. I don't have the power to. But this time I'm going to try different. I'm going to try harder, and I'm just going to change myself this time. And to that I would just say, stop. You can't. If you are your own worst enemy, why would you think that you could fix your problems? So just stop. And this is good news. You can't do it. The greatest challenge you will ever face isn't trying harder to free yourself, to set yourself free, to give yourself a new life. The greatest challenge you will ever face is to believe the gospel, to believe that Jesus is so scandalous, so loving, so committed to your freedom and your life that he gave up his own for yours. I don't know how this strikes you today. If this is something that you've known for a long time and you've shaped your life after, or if this is something that you've never heard before, that you came to church expecting a different message. But Jesus loves you. He came with you in his mind. He gave up his life and his freedom so that you could have both. He promises life and life to the full. Those he sets free indeed. If that's nothing you've ever known personally, man, I would love to pray with you after service. And I'll be around. And actually, in the back corner, there'll be people who are praying with people. Man, you can go back there and someone will find you and they will pray with you. We'd love to pray with you today. There's this verse, Romans 5:8. It says this, "But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." There are some things that you have to demonstrate. Like, you can't just explain it. Like, can you imagine trying to just explain to someone verbally how to tie a shoe? That'd be almost impossible. Or how to throw a football, or how to dice vegetables, or how to knit, or, you know, any of these things. How to shoot a free throw, how to quilt. Like, some things, you know, how to julienne potatoes or french fries. I don't know, you know, these things. Like, there's no way to sort of explain verbally. It would take way longer to just explain it verbally over and over and over again. Some things you just have to demonstrate. Some things words just aren't enough. That's what this is. That's what this story is. This story is God demonstrating how much he loved you. Not once you got yourself together, not once you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps, not once you fixed all your problems, but as you were, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is not the story of, all right, I'm going to get myself right, I'm going to clean myself up, I'm going to go to church, and then I, no. While you were You were at your worst while you had hit rock bottom, while your life was full of shame, while your life was full of regret, while you were in the midst, in the grasp of these things that dominated your life that you could not shake, you had no power to shake, while you were still sinners, Christ died for us. This was God demonstrating his love for you. If Friday is marked by the death on the cross, Sunday, Easter, is marked by the triumph in the tomb. If Friday is an invitation for you to become Barabbas, Sunday is an invitation for you to become the beloved. If you need someone to pray with you today, I will. If you need someone to pray with you and it's a little overwhelming to approach, there'll be people in the back of the room. They would love to pray with you. If this has struck you in a way that you didn't expect, don't let this moment pass. Have someone pray with you. Give yourself over, of as much of yourself as you understand, to as much of God as you understand. And with that, let's pray. Jesus, we set aside Easter because we want to have this reminder of how grateful and thankful we are for you, what you did on the cross. This invitation, this story of Barabbas is all of our story. And so we are so beyond grateful. But our gratefulness, this way that this changes our lives, it is not limited to Easter. Quite the contrary. It changes us and it shapes us in all of the other days. And the days we're not as focused on, the days that don't seem as holy and as sacred, those are the days where you are the most active, God. And so we're so grateful for what you did on the cross. We're so grateful for the way that you invited us, like Barabbas, to take a step off of that cross. You give up your life and your freedom so that we could have both, God. And so that's what this day is, Jesus. It's a day where we stop, we slow down, and we just worship you and we say thank you. Thank you for our new life. Thank you for that new relationship with God. Thank you for that freedom. God, if there's anyone here today, this is unfamiliar territory. Give them the courage to be prayed with. Give them the courage to find someone and say, I just want someone to pray with me. I feel like God's doing something in my heart. I didn't expect this. This can be someone's day. God, let this be someone's day. The day that marked the whole new them. The day that everything changed. The day that they were one thing before and a different thing after. And they point back and they tell their kids and they tell their grandkids, that was the day everything changed. That was the day I could not remove my own restraints and Jesus did it for me. That was the day that I tried to change my life and I just couldn't. That was the day. Jesus, our prayer is this. Let today be someone's day.